All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, is Thomas Brooks.
Hello.
And joining us today are two guests. We haven't had guests on in a while, and I'm very happy to introduce Stephanie Johnson and Dr. Rachel Lamb. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Good to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having us back. I'm really excited.
So if anyone listening has not listened to the interview for RMPA, we're going to have it linked in the episode. Listen to that first, then come back and join us, or listen to us and then go and listen to that. It was it ranks as like my top interview from that busy weekend. I had so much fun talking to everyone, and this has just stuck with me the most. So before we, I guess we get started and kind of delve into the world of tattooing and therapy, or tattooing as therapy, I'm gonna let you guys introduce kind of who you are, kind of beyond the name, who you are, what your research interests are, and kind of maybe talk a little bit about what led you to this project.
Okay, I'm assuming you want me to go first.
Oh yes, go ahead. Yep.
So my name, I don't know if that's my cat. My name is Stephanie Johnson. I'm a tattoo artist in Ogden City, Utah. I've been tattooing almost 10 years. I will hit my 10-year mark in December, which I'm pretty excited about. It's a big deal. I like I said, started tattooing 10 years ago when I was in school at ISU. I got my first art degree at ISU and was also doing my apprenticeship at the time. I never felt smart enough to go into psychology, even though I loved it. So it wasn't until now that I really like was comfortable enough to go into psych, but that's kind of like a little backstory. So yeah, practicing tattoo artist, part-time, quote unquote therapist. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, so let me add a little bit to Stephanie, because she's a humble, modest gal here. This is Rachel here. I'm a psychology professor at Weber State University in Ogden, and I'm part-time there, and I'm also a psychedelic assisted guide and therapist. So Stephanie and I met in class because she took my research methods class. She brought the idea to me. She was very mature coming in as a student in an undergrad program for the degree to which she really had ideas for research. I don't come across that too often in undergrad. I was full-time academic and grad, you know, research and grad student stuff prior to being here in Ogden. But I primarily teach undergrads. Stephanie stood out. I loved her idea. I am also a person with tattoos and has used tattoos as sort of a coping mechanism, I'd say. And so she really had the idea that I was able to support and give her some more resources and tools to really take it and push it forward. And when she ran the class study, we got some interesting results, even at the classroom level. And then I encouraged her to go further because I thought she had potential. So she ended up taking independent research credits with me. We ran a cool study that I'm sure we'll get into and talk about if you guys want to go there. I can't remember what we talked about the last time. In her results, she found some significant results. And so I see her as a person who is going to combine some fields that haven't really been combined before. And that's always exciting for me. So so that's me and kind of the way Stephanie and I came together to kind of continue this work, which is really her work. It's her work with me supporting her.
Excellent. Stephanie, would you walk us through starting off with like what drew you to tattoos and to being a tattoo artist first? And like, this is almost a 10-year journey for you. So like, how has that been? Like, what got you into it? Like, can you tell us some background on that?
It's been a wild, wild journey, and not one that I thought I was actually going to take. Like I had mentioned previously, I was going to ISU, and it kind of fell in my lap. But even earlier, I had always done art. I've always loved art. I took every art class I could. I knew I wanted to be in a field with art, but I didn't know what it would be. I grew up in a very religious town where tattoos were not very accepted, so it never really crossed my mind. And then I went to ISU, was working on a degree, and I was actually going to be a teacher. I was taking art courses and literature courses to combine like art and lit to teach high school. I would have loved to have taught high school, but you know, it just didn't work out. I ended up really focusing on the art side of it, and then I ended up with two art degrees. I don't even know how that happened, but I ended up with my art degrees, and in that time I had met someone that was like, I really like your work, would you be interested in doing an apprenticeship? And I had had a bit of a run-in with the industry, and it wasn't the greatest, so I was very like wary of it. But he kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and I was like, okay, all right, fine, I'll give it a shot. If I feel weird about this at all, I'm gonna drop out. And it's been the one activity in my entire life, other than education, that I started off, I was horrible. I was so bad. And it was the one activity that I was bad at, but I never gave up on it, which is weird for me. I'm definitely one of those people that when something is like difficult, I'm like, nah, forget that. I don't want that. But yeah, down this road, this journey of tattooing, I would say about 3 years after finishing my apprenticeship, I was like, man, there's these people and they're just info dumping on me. And it's not just like normal information. It's like things that even their spouses don't know, or like, you know, just these things that I was having a hard time coping with, because I was like, well, how do I help this person? Like, what do I do? And I know that as an artist, it's not my responsibility to help them. But another part of me was like, well, why not? Why can't you? And so towards that, you know, 3 to 4 year mark is when I started getting this idea, like, well, why can't I introduce a therapeutic setting to a tattoo environment, that it would be the best place, specifically for people like myself or like Rachel, who use tattooing as kind of a coping mechanism. And I've heard, you know, we've all heard people using tattoos as like their ink therapy, which I think is kind of a lame term, but it's totally what it is. But they use it as a way to create physical pain for emotional trauma. And if you can watch something physical on your body heal, you might be able to heal the emotional trauma in which you're enduring, which I find really amazing. And it's been interesting. I've heard a lot of artists talk about it, and not just artists. I've also heard piercers. There's one piercer in particular that kind of went on this journey, but she didn't end up going to school for it. But I think it's becoming more accepted that this setting of art can also be very therapeutic, not only for artists but for the clients. And so that's a really long explanation of how this got to be where it's at now. So in 2020, when the pandemic happened, I decided that I had nothing better to do because I was out of work for 5 weeks. So I decided to sign up for school. And I was like, nah, we'll see what happens. And I loved it. I finished my bachelor's degree at Weber State in 2 years exactly, and now we're getting ready to apply to grad school while tattooing full time.
Your third bachelor's, right? Your third bachelor's degree, yeah, right.
Wow.
I will say, yeah. I'm immediately going to go change the title of our interview from ink therapy to something else at this point.
Oh, you can call it ink therapy. It's just like one of those things that I hear a lot. I'm like, man, I feel like there's a better name for this, but there's really not. Like, it's perfect.
There's not a better name until you name it.
Right? Well, I can't be like the stab and heal. Like, the that's not how that works.
If you write the first paper on it, you can call it whatever you want.
You know what? There we go. There's the title of our first paper, Stephanie.
The stab and scab.
Stab and scab. There you go.
No,
We're gonna slip that in somewhere in the paper. We'll find a way.
A good old stab and scab. Love it.
Thomas and I were talking. Oh, I'll let you go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead. I didn't know if you were gonna say anything.
Okay, I was thinking. Thomas and I were talking earlier because we were kind of recording our retrospect, which I think will come out a couple weeks before this interview. And we were kind of going back and forth on the idea of, I guess, therapy versus therapeutic, and that there's this sort of nature of things that are therapeutic, or that can be therapeutic, versus, like, I guess how we would define like therapy and psychology. And it seems that like your work is kind of looking to kind of bridge that gap, to saying like tattooing itself could be therapeutic, but your average artist maybe isn't equipped to kind of run through like a full cognitive behavioral therapy plan or a Rogerian therapy plan. Or maybe they are. And that's kind of like where I kind of maybe want to get your thoughts. And both of you could chime in on this too, that get your thoughts on kind of the nature of something like tattooing, or it actually came up in our talk of like a, you know, like a psilocybin group, or someone kind of going through that process where just the act of taking psilocybin, or, you know, I was thinking of like, you know, like going and seeing a shaman and taking ayahuasca or something like that, like the act of doing that may not be therapy in kind of the sense that we view it, but it could be therapeutic. Or are we kind of, I guess, more conflating terms, or kind of bridging a gap that maybe doesn't, you know, isn't as clear cut?
I can say many, many things about this. I actually have facilitated both psilocybin and ayahuasca ceremonies. I'm also director of a ketamine clinic, so I've actually been facilitating ketamine sessions for about 3 years. So the conversation we get into in that space, and this is why I think I had such an interest in what Stephanie was doing with tattooing. So there are what I would just simply call the healing arts. There are the healing arts. There's many things involved in that. Could be yoga, energy work, massage. It could be psychedelic assisted therapy. It could be CBT and ACT and all of the Western trained kinds of therapies. All of those can fit into the healing arts, let's say. There's a lot of discussion in this whole area right now about how do you determine sort of credibility and legitimacy across these two very distinct kind of extremes of Western psychology and Eastern and Indigenous healing, right? So these two groups don't want to talk to each other a lot of the time. So there is movement that I see where there's a lot of crossover starting, and there are Indigenous shamans from their countries that are coming into conferences with medical doctors who do psychedelic assisted therapies, and they're talking to each other. So this is actually a very exciting time for this work. And I find myself right in the middle of it as a academic psychologist. And by the way, my psychology degree is not from the mental health field. All my experience in the mental health field has been directly in the field and through trainings. So I've gotten all of my, what I would call my like therapeutic training outside of the tradition Western academic clinical situation. And I made that decision on purpose, because when I started training for ketamine, my therapist who was training me, she said, "You're such a great student for this because you don't have to unlearn everything the Western trained therapists have learned that don't work in this other space." So this is a very interesting thing, right? So I thought about going back and getting a therapy degree and getting licensed. And I decided that wasn't worth 3 years of my time, because I was going to learn a bunch of stuff that wouldn't be useful to this space of psychedelic and altered consciousness kind of healing. So if we bring all this back to tattooing, when I had Stephanie in my class and listen to the way she talked about it, I thought, you know, this is just another form of almost like an extreme kind of somatic healing art. Like, so the actual causing of pain, physical pain, does a bunch of different things, right? It does energetic things. It does psychological things. It does physical things. It does neurological things, physiological things, right? So one very base place is that you have an endorphin release when you have physical pain caused, right? So that can bring, like, people get like sort of addicted to tattoos. And so Stephanie can tell you way more about that, I'm sure, but I did. I get a craving. I'm like, I need to go get worked on. It's like a weird thing. And I've talked to other people who have tattoos. You know, there's something about that, that there's a benefit. There's some kind of benefit, even kind of like knowing what it feels like to kind of endure kind of just this constant sort of physical discomfort or pain. And then there's all of the other spheres of these things. And so I kind of see tattooing, it could become sort of one of these healing arts. And this is interesting because psychedelics are already on the fringes, but that's coming into more mainstream and very reputable doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists are talking about it and all of those things. Bringing in the healers from indigenous cultures, bringing in actual shamans to talk about it and share knowledge and those kinds of things. Tattooing and body modification, it feels even more fringe in a way. So I think it's exciting to have kind of a person like Stephanie who is interested in the Western academic psychology space, but has had the practice of how tattooing psychologically affects people. So I definitely see it as a bridge, and I see it as a bridge that is entering into a very interesting time of things already coming together. So sorry, that was a lot of words, but that's right up my alley.
No, that's great. That's like, yeah.
Also kind of wanted to add to that just a little bit because I am not a practicing therapist or anything, but the way I always viewed therapy and therapeutic was like therapy was like the mental side of it, the non-physical side, and therapeutic is the physical side. Did I say that right? Therapy, non-physical, therapeutic, physical. Yeah. So it's like when you merge those two things together, you create a therapeutic environment with the aspect and the learning capabilities of therapy. So it just like, it like strengthens that learning and redirecting of how we think, because not only do we have the mental side of it happening, but we also have the physical side of it happening, which is, as humans, like, physical pain is one of the best ways we learn to avoid, or, you know, it's how we learn. It's just biologically what we're supposed to, how we, you know, who deal with things. And so if we take that physical pain and use it to our advantage rather than against us, like, I can't even imagine the possibilities that we could find.
So thinking about exploring your deepest fantasy about this merging, like, what do you see in the future with tattooing and this therapeutic environment? Like, are you thinking like tattoo artists who are trained healers? Are you like training psychologists to do tattoos? Like, where does your imagination run with this for what the future could hold with this merging?
This has actually been something that I've thought about a lot, in the sense of like, how could I get this to work? And I've met a lot of artists that are so interested in the field of psychology, but they're nervous about the schooling. And so I feel like if one of us takes the leap, multiple will follow. I think you're going to be surprised with how many people are going to kind of fall into this, like, okay, I'm ready to go back to school. And not that school should be easy, but I think if we make it easier for people to understand that it's not impossible to go to school and to get good grades, you know, it's not that hard. I was tattooing full time 7 days a week and was still able to do my schooling and came out pretty decent with my grades. And so it's not impossible, but I think for a lot of us that became artists, we feel like it's impossible because our entire lives we were told, oh, well, like, have fun flipping burgers, you're an artist, you know, it's really like degrading. But the way I thought about it being set up is either artists would become therapists. If therapists would like to become artists, that's great, but that's like a whole extra time to where, you know, you're going to have to like learn how to be good at doing artwork rather than just like learning how to be good at talking to people and like managing those relationships and stuff. Which are both equally difficult. So no, nobody's like better on either end. It's definitely difficult on both ends, but I would love to see artists and therapists paired together. I think that would be the best way to get it done in a smooth transition to where like a therapist would come into the session. So there would essentially be three people in the room, which I think would be more of like a tribal setting where it's not just you and this other person, it's you, this other person, and then, you know, like a third entity that's like there and with you. And I think the more we start exploring this idea of multiple people, kind of like a group therapy, but not, it's like more focused on one person, but with two people kind of, you know, giving advice and helping in whatever aspect they're able to. I think we're going to see like a really weird change of how people are going to accept and learn from this form of therapy in a therapeutic setting.
Yeah, I'll add on that a bit because I can dream big. I can dream in great fantasy. So I'm just going to go there because what I can imagine is there is a whole university for arts meets psychology, arts meets therapy. Like it's actually its own created program that perhaps Stephanie will create as she goes through grad school and does research and does gets attains all those skills, right? I mean, this is what we do. We get these academic degrees and then we want to do things to help the world and we do research and put this knowledge out there. So I mean, I would imagine that something new needs created to accommodate these two very different things. I'm watching it happen between the psychedelic indigenous space and the Western psychedelic space. And it's really beautiful when it does come together. And people, when they engage in these conversations, they're so in awe of sort of one another is sometimes how it happens. A lot of times it's the Western person in awe of the shaman, in awe of the indigenous person that has done, you know, their healing practices, you know, in whatever parts of the world, through the Native American space, through the Latino space. I mean, all across the world, I'm Asian. So there's a whole Asian world of shamanism and healing arts. So I imagine a brand new space that does not yet exist where, and I see it sort of similarly as to you, Stephanie, because like, I don't know that every therapist would want to go train to be an artist like that's probably less common than tattoo artists who are already there providing this sort of non-named informal therapy if you call it that would want the skills and tools to like do that part better. And I love the idea of what you're saying, Stephanie, about like maybe it's a communal tribal kind of setting. And I wonder if this is even a time where you can share a little bit about some of what you read about like tribal communities and how they use tattooing. I mean, maybe we draw from those models, which takes us then into anthropology and cultural studies and all kinds of other spaces, right? But I see this as a brand new thing that will get created because like-minded people are now coming together to talk about this and actually ideate about it and then see where's the funding, where's the people, how can this work, who are the experts, like who are all the collaborative people we can pull into this space to create a new thing that isn't trying to like jam the tattoo artist into traditional academic schooling, because maybe that's actually not even the best way. Like maybe there's a whole new way of doing training, and maybe it's certification based, or maybe it's like a full graduate program. I mean, there's graduate programs out there now where you combined mysticism, psychology, science, and plant medicine. And that's like a PhD you can get now. I mean, there's kind of wild stuff that's popping up there that I see in my world. So I could imagine this kind of thing manifesting in that way.
Yeah, I guess I'll segue us into talking about the ritual aspect, or the kind of, I guess, tribal aspect or group aspect of this. One of the things that I guess Thomas and I have been kind of, I don't want to say hung up on, because it's just been at the forefront of some of our discussions, is discussion about the idea of ritual. And we had this discussion not too long ago with a former, I guess now colleague. He was my thesis mentor. He studies evolutionary psych and ritual, and was commenting that, like, we've kind of lost ritual. Like, that there are some examples within our society, but we've kind of lost that ritual, and we kind of look for these things. And so tattooing may be one of them, where people look for this way to get in touch with a ritual that they can't really find, or find, like, meaning or purpose or something like in elsewhere. And so I guess if you could talk about that a little bit, about, like, the use of tattooing as a ritual, or as this, you know, kind of getting into that, like, communal setting that does kind of mimic, like, what we would have seen, you know, in kind of early anthropological culture, with tribes getting together, someone seeing a shaman, or this kind of ritual tattooing that would be used, as we've kind of commented on that rite of passage in our last discussion, that the tattooing kind of serves that purpose, or serves some purpose for the individual. And then we still kind of see that today. So we're still sort of using it in similar ways, as a use of healing, as a use of marking something, and then that we can kind of move forward with that, with this idea of tattoo therapy.
Yeah, it's such a crazy thing to talk about, because it's so hard to track the history of tattooing, and body modification in general. I mean, bodies are made to disappear; they're organic; they go away. So how do you track the history of something that you can't preserve unless conditions are perfect, you know? And I think that's where it all kind of starts, is we have evidence of tattoos on, I think it's like Otzi the Iceman. Is that how you say his name? I can't remember. But they believe that where his tattoos were primarily around, like, his joints and stuff, were also sites where they were doing acupuncture. So they think that tattooing and acupuncture were kind of together at the same point in time. But again, it's really hard to pinpoint when that happened. So we know that there was at least some sort of practice going on to it being important enough to mark the body forever. And from the things I'm able to see and read that is common practice today, is like, the oceanic people, when they have, like, the mokas for the women, which are the lower jaw tattoos. That is a huge ritual. When they do those tattoos, the whole family's there. It's such a bonding moment for the family and the community, and a rite of passage for those women to be part of that community. And tattooing is, like, such a small area. If we wanted to branch out further, scarification and piercing are some of the two, like, bigger ones that we know about. We know about the sun dance that the Native Americans would do. They would basically suspension. It was essentially suspension. They would, you know, be suspended in the sun all day. That was a sun dance. And there was a lot more to it. And like I said, I this is not my realm of study. I'm working more on the psychology part, so I'm giving just, like, very brief descriptions. We also see, in Papua New Guinea, the people that scar their bodies like alligators to become men. And there's also other indigenous tribes that will wear the gloves with the fire ants in them, and where that's not permanently marking their body, they're introducing such a huge amount of pain for hours on end to make this transition into adulthood. And like you said, like, we're missing this ritual part of life. And as humans in the 21st century, we live such a protected and sterile life. And, you know, the bad, terrible things happen. I understand that. but we don't have to wake up every day and wonder where our next meal is going to be. You know, we don't wake up every day and have to fight for our lives. At least the majority of us don't. And I think that we have forgotten what it is to be human, which essentially is an exposure to pain. It's an exposure to change. And I think that tattooing and piercing and scarification and suspension is such a way for us to kind of get back to the roots of being human. And it is a ritual. Like, you go in, you meet your artist, you have to trust this person, because at this time you are so vulnerable. You are so open. Like the story I had before, I'm laying nude on a table with a room full of strangers. I have to be okay with those people. And that in itself is such a humbling moment to meet and create with these individuals, not only as a client, but also as an artist. And that in itself, I feel, is very ritualistic. But it's not something that I can, like, if you haven't gone through it, you have to, in order to understand it. You know, you meet your artist, you find the person that works with you, and it's just, you create this bond that is amazing. I have tattoos on my body that I remember the name of the artist who's long since passed, or I'll probably never see again. But in that moment in time, we created such a strong bond that I will remember their face in our conversation and the tattoo I got with them for the rest of my life. And that's really cool to me.
I might be slightly closer convinced to get a tattoo.
You should. You should. I support this 100%. And it's, like I said, if you haven't experienced it, even if you just get something small, if you, like, research the artist and find who you want to go to, and you, like, meet with them. Like, I always tell people, if you're not comfortable with the tattoo or getting the idea of getting it, just come in and we'll talk about it. If you don't want to do it, it's totally fine. I'm never going to force you to get a tattoo. But I guarantee you're going to leave that building wondering, what is it going to be like? And it's really fun to see people like, oh, this is my first tattoo, has to be full of meaning. And I'm like, 3 months, you're going to be back and you're going to get a paperclip because you think paperclips are really cool. And it always happens. It's like the 3 to 4 month mark. They're like, I don't care. Just do something. I'm craving this kind of pain again, or this kind of, I don't even know if it's like pain or just, it's just like the emotionally, physically raw environment where you get to be yourself and you know nobody there is going to judge you because we don't care. Like, I don't care. You can tell me it's horrible. I mean, very few things are going to bother me and I'm not going to judge you for it. So
I think I'm laughing. I'm giggling because this is exactly what happened to me, Stephanie. I went and got my first tattoos on my 18th birthday. I couldn't wait to get them. I'd always wanted them. And then, like, you know, I picked these very particular, like, butterflies, and there was meaning behind the symbol of a butterfly for me, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, literally, it was like within 6 months, I was just like, oh, I want more. I want to do this again. So I love this conversation about ritual, because I do think tattooing is one of those things that's kind of almost becoming like a little bit more mainstream just in and of itself, and without thinking about, without the intention or direct purpose of like, we're gonna, ritual is missing in society, so let's make tattooing more popular to have ritual again, because that's healthy for, you know, with none of that there, it's just kind of like happening. So this is an interesting discussion for me. And I will say that I totally felt the same way. Like, you sit there with this person that is holding on, you've got their hands on your body. I have a pretty big back piece, and that was an 8-hour piece. I had to do it in 2-hour chunks. I could not, my body could not sit in the pain for more than a couple hours at a time. I will never forget my artist. He did exactly what you said, Stephanie. He sat with me. We talked through it. I wanted something that was symbolizing, you know, where I was at the time. I drew my own design, and then he took it and like made it amazing and beautiful. And so there were all these points. And there was one time, and I just want to share this quick story just about the therapy aspect of it. My body just started shaking after about an hour and a half. And I said, gosh, this man's name was Feroz. He's a New Zealander, lived in Singapore, ran a tattoo shop / barber shop, which is a thing there, and travels all over the world doing tattoos. I got super lucky. He happened to just have space to take someone when I walked in the shop. It was totally not normal thing. So I'm going for an hour and a half. And I said, why am I already shaking? Like, why can't I handle the pain right now? And he goes, have you gotten in a recent fight with like a partner or anything? And I was like, yeah. And he said, think about that right now and you're going to process it. And I went to 2.5 hours. And so it was wild. Like, he used it as an actual therapeutic strategy in that moment for me. And it allowed me to endure another hour of that pain, which I felt afterwards. It's like the afterwards is such a feeling for me of like just this visible like accomplishment, or like this visible like I look what I just endured, like that in and of itself has this aspect of motivation and probably a serotonin dump and a dopamine dump if you go to the, you know, the neurotransmitters and all that. So anyway, I'm just happy to be at this discussion and hear Stephanie talking about it and all these possibilities, you know, all these possibilities for the future.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I also have not been tattooed yet, but this conversation is slowly convincing me. I was curious if we could dig in a little bit more with what we talked about at RMPA, this idea of like this gendered relationship with tattooing that men and women go to experience and leave tattooing sessions differently, kind of based off of your findings, but also kind of like speculation around like this idea of the rite of passage for men being missing.
Okay, sorry, I couldn't unmute. So it's really funny that you would bring this up, because I actually just had a conversation with my client who got tattooed this morning. I was talking with her and her husband, and we were both, I tattooed both of them. They were both getting face tattoos, so it was a pretty big change for them. And her husband, you know, we were kind of laughing about, it was her first like major face tattoo, and she was like, oh man, like, people are gonna look at me weird. And her husband chimed in, and he was like, I've had face tattoos and you see how I get stared at, but for some reason I have a feeling it's going to be more accepted for you. And then we kind of got on this discussion about how we're not really sure why it is normal for women to change their bodies so much and to be comfortable with that. But for men with face tattoos, they're like, oh God, like, stay away from that guy, he's gonna rob you. But when I got my face tattooed, I had so many people approaching me about my work. Like, I have facial tattoos, I don't want you to talk to me. And they were like walking up to me in grocery stores, you know, like it's so crazy how being a female kind of changes that aspect of body modification. And that's just like a small little side story of this conversation. And it really did make me wonder, like, why is that? Why is there such a vast difference between men and women getting tattooing? But then, you know, we also at RMPA, we talked about how women were more open to expressing joy after a tattoo. And it kind of just led into this, you know, that conversation led into this other conversation about the study where, you know, I told them about women expressing joy more, and they're like, oh, why do you think that is? And I was like, I don't know if it's just because women are more open and in tune with their emotions to like express that and like to come in and be like, okay, I'm excited about this tattoo, but what am I actually feeling? And then answering those questions. Whereas with men, it might be a little bit harder to open up, and they're like, oh, well, I'm excited. And I know I'm excited because of this tattoo, but I don't want to talk about anything else that's happening. So I feel like it's not necessarily that And you know, maybe men and women just express those things differently, but I would like to think that it's not necessarily that they don't feel those things differently. It's that men no longer feel safe enough to express those things openly, where in women it's kind of expected. You know, we're expected to be the emotional ones. We're expected to be able to just like throw these words out and how we feel out all the time, but men kind of have to shy away from that. But on the flip side, I hate that women's bodies are just expected to change outwardly all the time. I hate that that is how, like, if a woman gets a tattoo, it's like shamed, but it's expected, you know, just like wearing makeup or getting plastic surgery done. But when men get a tattoo, it's like, oh, he got a tattoo. It's not a big deal. You know, and that it's a really odd thing. I don't know if I'm explaining it very well, but it's something that now when you walk around, when you start really focusing on who you're looking at, if you see a man with tattoos, chances are you're gonna kind of just like let him walk by. But with female with tattoos, you're always like kind of curious, like, oh, what does she have? What's this? What's that? And you know, so even some of my clients are like, oh yeah, I've noticed that I do that. So I don't know, kind of a weird thing that got brought up today.
So it's almost like there's this weird tension between, like, socially women are expected to engage in body modifications, but personally they're judged about them. And then dudes are personally expected to get tattoos, but then socially, like, you like cross the street so you don't have to walk by the dude with the face tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a weird give and take. And like, I can't speak for what it is to be male because I'm not male. I don't identify as a male. I've always been female. I've always identified as female. But it is so difficult to be like how do I put this in a way that is acceptable? Like pregnant women. This is a really great example. Oh, you're expected to have babies. Have babies. Make the babies. But then as soon as your baby's gone or out, you better get back to your base weight. And it's just this constant like judgment of how society sees us, how we see ourselves, and how we're supposed to be, but not everyone can fit into that box. It's such a wild dynamic that we constantly, as each gender or every gender, is stressing themselves over, and it's wild. It's so wild to me.
I had a thought as you were talking. Like, I mean, we talked about this a little bit at RMPA, but the idea of like there are these more, I guess, drastic physical changes in women. And so there's already maybe this expectation of change or this kind of societal, like it's existed with us for a very long time that there are more noticeable changes, or like during a pregnancy, there are more noticeable, you know, noticeable changes. I mean, even maybe we can argue, like, when we get into things like the difference between like menopause and andropause, like there are differences, and it may be much less noticeable in men, especially with that lack of like noticeable shift. Like, maybe growing a beard is one of those things, but like lack of a noticeable shift, that seeing a man with tattoo usually kind of comes with other assumptions, whereas like change in women may be something. And again, I'm really spitballing here, but thinking about those kind of gendered expectations and why it might be like, oh, expected, but there's still this sort of like comfort or fascination or like inappropriate staring or whatever we might want to kind of like approach when it comes to like women and tattoos. Whereas like with men with it'd be the same thing if like with, I think, with like men with piercings, like there can be stigma and you know, differences in how like women with piercings and men with piercings are viewed. And it might be changing significantly. And I look at Thomas with his piercings. But like I remember, like, I would have never thought in high school to get a piercing because of like stereotypes and things associated with that. And now it had been like, well, different, but like I'm past that point of like high school and like maybe thinking, well, I could, but probably could. But those like gendered expectations like playing a role in that. I don't know if I made any sense. But...
Yeah, no, I just have a, I was just thinking of like, this is kind of what my brain always does is like, what's the new collaborative possibility that can come out of all of this? And so I actually wonder, is tattooing, you know, is the tattoo culture a space where at least amongst people who are in the culture, actually gender roles sort of fall away a little bit? Like, I don't know, Stephanie, you'd probably know that better, but like my sense of like, when I see a man with tattoos, actually I'm drawn to the art. Like I don't get afraid. Like if I see a man with a face tattoo, that's curious to me, but I'm also a person who has been tattooed and talks to people who have tattoos. And so I'm thinking about that old school, like my tattoos are all hidden and that's intentional. I mean, I knew I was going to get a college degree and go into the workforce in some way. And, you know, you can't see any of my tattoos unless I'm, you know, wearing a bathing suit or something like that. Right. I'm changing that. I'm getting ready for Stephanie to do some work on me, which I'm very excited about. But yeah, so I'm starting to open up myself where I feel like I'm at a status in my own life, you know, with an advanced degree and the career I have and whatever, where I am now like, you know what, I want to actually display this part of me that I feel is important. And I don't care anymore what those eyes are thinking. Like if they're staring at me in a way of whatever it is, objectification, fascination, danger, right? Like, you know, lack of safety for their children or whatever those things are, I don't care what they think anymore. And I don't know how that many attitudes collectively that come forth will actually be what starts to change the whole ways that people are looking and judging all of this. So I just come back to say that I wonder if tattooing as a culture is a thing that is actually pushing the boundaries of these ways that we treat and deal with each other that actually aren't adaptive. They're actually maladaptive. Like maybe tattooing is a place where it's actually pushing like the evolution of people. I mean, I don't know. This is just all the way I'm, you know, kind of taking all these bits of data that we're all sharing and putting them together and mashing them up and going like, huh, what's the new thing? Like what can we create for society out of this? What can we create for people who are in tattooing or aren't in tattooing or in psychology or not in psychology? Like, what is the new thing that's going to grow from all of this kind of coming together and swirling around together?
And kind of a little side note on that is that, I mean, tattooing was such a big part of so many cultures for so long that it's interesting that at some point in time, it all of a sudden became something bad, right? So there had to have been a shift somewhere where something was happening. And I had read a paper or an article about this, and they believe that a lot of the Western culture in like the hatred of tattoos and body modifications actually comes back from the time when there were like a lot of like shipping, like people on ships going around, and they were visiting these cultures that this society that was very refined and, you know, had technology saw these other cultures with tattoos and saw them as dirty. And so when these sailors would come back with these tattoos, they were like, oh, they're sailors, they're dirty, they go to these dirty places. And not to say that that's where it came from, but there's a lot of people that are kind of like, oh, maybe that is where this stemmed. And then it just kind of perpetuated, you know, we have all these, we have a lot of religions that are very against marking your body, which is totally fine. And if that's for you, that's great. But I do think that there is a shift happening. And I see a lot of people that have these really, really prestigious degrees and titles, and they're covered in tattoos. And I think it really changes the way people look at you, in the sense that, like, I have a hard time going to a therapist or a doctor that doesn't have tattoos because I don't feel comfortable with them. I like to know that the person I'm seeing also understands that side of me. And I like that people feel comfortable opening up to me because they look at the artwork on my body and they know that I'm not going to judge them. So I do think it is causing a large shift. And I'm seeing a lot more people with tattoos that are becoming more accepted and more hireable, I guess. They're getting these good jobs, and it's like, yeah, of course this person's going to be a hard worker. If they can sit there for 8 hours getting stabbed by a needle, they're going to be able to sit through this meeting that should have been an email. Like, it's going to be fine. They're going to do great. And it bothers me that that's like, oh, the piercing and the tattooed person is going to be a terrible worker. No, we are so good at enduring stupid shit for so long. We're like the best workers.
Yeah, I'm even more interested to get a tattoo now because, like, yeah, like if I could sit through that meeting. It's got to be nothing, right? It's got to be nothing compared to that.
Oh, it's way easier to get a tattoo than sit through those meetings. I'm just going to say that right now.
So much easier.
Well, Stephanie, we now know what your first monograph is going to be, the gender dynamics of tattooing in Western society, where you'll provide us all of the answers in 2028.
Oh, geez. Oh gosh.
No pressure.
There's a lot of pressure.
Are we about to say the same thing? Yeah, I think we're about to say the same thing. So.
Oh, right on. Closing statements. Yeah. So anything we didn't get to talk about or stuff that we, you know, looking to the future of like, what is RMPA 2024 look like versus like, what is, you know, the future of this area look like? We've touched on it a little bit, but is there anything else that y'all wanted to speak to about tattooing and psychology that, you know, should be put out into the ether for consideration?
I mean, as far as right now, I'm still kind of looking at grad schools. I'm working on this paper. The paper is the main priority right now, the grad school thing. I know I have a little bit of time. But I would like to kind of make my circle a little bit larger. I think I'm going to start reaching out to people. I know that there is a psychologist in England that works with a lot of tattooed people. She wrote a really amazing book on just interviewing people with tattoos, and I would really like to get with her. And she would be a great source, but I think I'm going to start reaching out more to like anthropologists. There seems to be like one or two that are really interested in body modification and the history of it. And if I could get in contact with them, like, that would be awesome. As far as future studies, I think me and Rachel have a list of studies that we would like to do. I don't know if we'll ever have enough time to do them. But I think my next study, I would really love to do like a pre and post survey like we had done before, and then like a 2-week checkup and a 4-week checkup, and kind of see like how long do these emotions from this physical trauma last? Is it something that goes on further than just right after the tattoo? Like, are we still making an emotional impact after weeks after the process? So that's something. Sorry, my cats are running around. It's something that I would really like to look at as a future study, just to kind of see or get a gauge on like how much is this new part of your body, essentially, this new picture, changing your life for the better.
Yeah, that just reminded me, Stephanie, of some of the other conversations we've had. And then, of course, as you know, as this grows into kind of, you know, more research and more questions and things, one of the things we had talked about is sort of like seeing if we could isolate aspects of the whole experience, like somehow, and like what aspect of tattooing is therapeutic just in the body visceral sensation pain? What part of the tattoo is therapeutic in actually having conversation with your tattoo artist, like almost you might do with your hairdresser, you know, or somebody you're kind of like sitting there stuck with getting a treatment, and you end up just talking and having that chatting. There's also like the vulnerability aspect, as we talked about it just here today, is really, really fascinating to me. Like, what, you know, like, how do we look at, you know, that in kind of like an isolated manner, like, because this then this takes me all the way back to like what trauma informed practices really are, like what trauma informed therapy actually is. It's not CBT, folks, just FYI. Like, we've got to dig in and go to the roots of things, which requires vulnerability. And you can't be vulnerable if you don't feel safe. So what an interesting like juxtaposition of coming into a tattoo shop amongst like historically scary looking people for Western Americans anyway. And now it's become a space where you actually have to feel safe enough to expose your body to physical pain. And in that, actually have an emotional and psychological benefit, like at an immediate effect. And then like Stephanie's saying, like, well, what about down the road? Like how much does that whole, if we call it ritual, what is the impact of the whole ritual long-term even? Like, you have that tattoo forever. I mean, unless you get it removed or you're done over, right? But that's a thing. Like you're making this decision to have a permanent stamp of something at that time of your life on your physical body. Like my curiosity about like how all of that works separately and then collectively and in different pairings, like figuring out how to design research studies that can actually dig at some of that is what's really interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll throw you another one, Stephanie. You can do this. I'm not going to do this. But two comments that I've noticed from both of y'all is Stephanie remembers the name and story of all of the tattoo artists that have done the work. And then Rachel talked about how like thinking about that argument with a partner prolonged the ability to endure the pain. And so I'm wondering if there's like a memory consolidation aspect to this as well, that you could look at like exposing participants to some sort of like stimuli at the beginning and then see what the long-term memories of that stimuli are at the end. To see if it's like kind of a way to like reconsolidate and like strengthen memories and maybe even like a little bit of false memory. Like, you want to look at the best in a situation that you were just in. And so you put those good feelings in and you like make meaning and understanding in it. The memory gets locked in and then it's stable over a long period of time.
Yeah, I actually really love that idea because I think so much of what Rachel was talking about is that idea, is like taking something bad and turning it into something manageable, maybe not good, but at least manageable. And I really love that idea. I think that would be a really cool study. And, you know, even how we would navigate that, I don't know. I bet Rachel would know. We're gonna make Rachel do it.
I know some things, but I don't know many things, which I very much believe in collaboration. I really do. My actual dissertation research was in collaborative learning. That was actually my academic place of expertise. And so I really actually see how idea generation and creation happens from people talking together. So that like this discussion is awesome because it's reinvigorated my own interest like in what Stephanie's doing. Who is the researcher? I stepped out. I'm not doing my own academic research anymore. I got teaching. I've got psychedelic guide work I do. I've got all kinds of things and I'm happy doing that. But I love that I can be a collaborator with Stephanie and what she's doing and really like spearheading, because I do think it's just, it's fascinating. It's interesting. And for me, it's like going to this back to that space of like, hey, there's a whole host of healing arts that we can have access to in the world. And why are we limiting ourselves by like this one here or this one here? Like, why aren't we opening all this up? Because guess what? We're all horrendously traumatized. We've just been through a pandemic, a worldwide death and illness and all this stuff. I mean, we're actually historically all traumatized right now. And so it's fascinating to me, like within the fields I'm tucked into, to see this openness emerging, this collaboration is emerging, these discussions are happening. And it's awesome. And I love it. And I, you know, I have my skills, you know, I'm a trained cognitive psychologist, essentially. Like I have, so what you're talking about, Thomas, I'm like, oh yeah, like this very information processing kind of memory consolidation. I'm like, how would that model like come into the discussion of trying to do research on like what's happening in the actual process and ritual of being tattooed. I mean, that's fascinating to me. So I'm happy I can be part of the discussion because of my experience that I never thought would lead to tattooing. Like, I never thought I would be in this space. And that's because Stephanie is, this is her passion, you know, and like I said, I'm so honored to actually work with her. Like I'm telling you, I think she's going to be famous. Like I'm going to be like, I'm like over off to the side here, like behind you, cheering you on and clapping and going, yay, like, look at this awesome stuff you're doing. And that feels great to me. I love that. So anyway, I don't have to gush over her anymore. I love her very much and she's become a good friend. So.
I see us as like, you're in the forefront. I'm like, yeah, that's my guy. So I think we have very mutual feelings of each other. I'm so lucky to have someone that's willing to not only like believe in what I'm researching, but also push me to be better at my research. Because I went into school like terrified. I was scared. You know, it's a whole bunch of trauma. And I went to Weber and I found Rachel and I'm like, wow, I think I can do this. And the only person that was capable of making me do that was Rachel. So I'm really grateful for her being, you know, my little cheerleader. And I try to be her cheerleader too.
You're going
to
make me cry. I'm crying
now. an aggressive cheerleader though. She's like, you can do it. I'm like, yeah, fight him. It's great.
And I could probably speak for Thomas. We're very happy to be a part of this conversation too. The research that you're doing is great. The kind of wholesome support, like mentor-mentee relationship is just everything I want to see. Everything I want to try to demonstrate with my own students. And it's just talking with the amount of passion and you know, it's such an interesting topic. And I agree with Rachel. Like, I'm hoping in like 10 years we can like try to book you and like I don't know, we probably won't be doing this in 10 years. But I'll be able to get you to like sign a book. Yeah, no. But no, we thank you so much.
Come get tattooed.
What?
Just come get tattooed. Come get tattooed and we'll call it even.
Okay. Deal. Deal. I'll build up. And I was thinking my thought on the kind of the throw out there like Thomas did. And I was thinking about this and I think, you know, you and Rachel both talked about like the idea of like the vulnerability. And I was thinking about like, why haven't I gotten a tattoo in like almost 40 years? and I wonder if that's part of it is that willingness to feel vulnerable. And maybe that's the difference between the man getting a tattoo and being super excited and emotional about it versus the one who's a little more constrained because there's that, and that gets back to what we talked about with that, you know, the sort of gender norms of willingness, availability to feel vulnerable as part of it. And but I don't know, maybe I'll suck it up. I don't want to say it too loud because my wife's in the other room and she'll like pop her head in and be like, you want to get a tattoo? Totally want to do that, right?
Bring her in. Bring her in. We're ready. Let's make this 4-person discussion a 5-person discussion. Let's go.
Well, that does put us at an hour, though, for bringing my wife into the podcast. Yeah, I would just say, I guess I appreciate you both talking with us. And when your paper gets published, come back on. Let's talk some more about this, just as an excuse to talk more about this, because I can delve into the like the anthropological side. I'm super interested in. It's what I did my master's thesis on, was evolutionary psych, and then I went to social psych, so I'm like super fascinated in that aspect of ritual and how we use these things in our world to like recapture some of that. Yeah, I don't know how to end this also, even like better. Yeah. So
no, you're great. This is great. And yeah, you know, maybe if you want to collaborate on some research, that would be tight.
I feel the same as Rachel. I'm at a point where like I'm I'm not there yet to where I can like just stop doing my own research, but I love collaborating.
I'll just be your aggressive cheerleader. Don't worry.
I love mixed method stuff. I love collaborating much more than I love doing my own stuff these days. Anything. I want to find a student now. We have a quasi clinical. We have a clinical track, and so like now I need to find a student with some tattoos who wants to try to like get into this side, and I'll have them reach out to you.
Perfect. I love that. Awesome.
Yeah, I think I love you talked about basically like it's community building time. Like this is new. This is a new area. So let's find all the people that are interested and bring them together and talk and see what happens.
Well, again, thank you. So happy having you talking with us. And I never know like how to end like a really good conversation because I don't want it to end. But I'll say on that note, we'll end our discussion and we'll bid our audience adieu.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having us. I really appreciate you guys inviting us back. This was really fun and I was really nervous, but I'm not so nervous now.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks you guys for what you're doing too. It's awesome. Happy to be here. Happy to be part of discussions that are.
Yeah, absolutely. It was so good to see you all again. So thank y'all so much.